The Law of Equivalent Exchange. This is Tim in Tokyo reading Fullmetal Alchemist in English in the Viz edition.
And this is Patrick in Kumamoto. I'm reading something completely different, so it's going to sound really strange today. No, I'm just kidding. I'm reading the...
You're reading Gintama.
I'm reading the Japanese original edition from Gangan Comics in Japanese.
And we're starting volume 11 this time, chapter 42.
42, that's a good number.
The Father Standing Before a Grave. Ugh. Some of these English titles are just don't sound natural. What is it in Japanese?
Father Standing Before a Grave.
Well,
it's basically...
Okay. Well, I figured it was a direct translation, but...
Yeah, yeah. It's very, very direct.
But, you know, often it seems to me that what works as a title in Japanese or to Japanese people doesn't work in English.
Well, it doesn't. It doesn't. There's, you know, like a language is...
A lot of times they'll retitle a movie in Japanese and, you know, it's completely different from the American one.
You know what my favorite retitle, like Japanese retitling of a U.S. movie is?
Hmm.
It's The Raw Deal with Schwarzenegger.
Okay.
Raw Deal, he's got his hair all slicked back, and he's wearing like a wife beater shirt, and it's really early. It's like, it's around about the time, I would say pre-Terminator 2, so he hadn't quite become an A-list yet. He was still C-list. And so, also in Japan, he wasn't that well known.
Wasn't doing the commercials yet.
No, wasn't doing the commercials yet. So, you know what they called Raw Deal? And it's just the poster just has like a close up of him from the shoulder up holding a shotgun or something. Gorilla. Gorilla, you know.
Which kind of gorilla?
They're basically saying that Schwarzenegger looks like a gorilla.
The ape, okay.
Yeah,
not
yeah.
a gorilla, but a
no,
gorilla.
No, not a gorilla fighter, but, you know, like, you know.
Well, yeah, that's the same approach they took with A-Team when they called Mr. T's character Kong instead of B.A. Baracus.
Right, right.
Big muscular guys are gorillas, so.
I guess. I think also... That Kong name also is because there is a pro wrestler, I think, with a similar name, and they wanted to kind of tie that in there together somehow. Because and this is convoluted, but it does tie into comics. One of my favorite movies of all time is called The Ninth Configuration. It's by William Peter Blatty. He wrote it, directed it. It's the only thing he ever directed. But, you know, Blatty is the guy who wrote The Exorcist.
Okay.
And so The Ninth Configuration's original title was Twinkle, Twinkle, Killer Kane. Because there's a guy named Kane in the story, and they call him Killer Kane because he's a killing machine. And Killer Kane is the Buck Rogers bad guy. He's like the Buck Rogers version of Ming the Merciless, except I think Buck Rogers predates Flash Gordon. So Killer Kane, it's from that, right? When somehow that movie made it to VHS in Japan, they kept the Twinkle, Twinkle, Killer Kane, they kept that, right? But when they translated it into Killer Khan instead of Killer Kane because there was a wrestler named Killer Khan, and it's just like not related at all. You know, it's like not related at all. It's not like they changed the guys in the movie. They didn't change his name to Khan either. His name is Kane still. And so it was just, they wanted some kind of name recognition.
Now you're reminding me of, what was it? The Naked Gun.
Right.
It was playing when I first got to Japan in 89. I had just seen it a couple months before I came. And so, you know, the opening scene, the cold open, has, you know, Drebin breaking up this cabal of America's enemies, and Gaddafi is there, and Khomeini, and Gorbachev, kind of oddly, and so on. And so he that happens before the credits, and then that's, you know, that's done. That's just a throwaway. But, you know, in those days, they were still like painting, you know, movie marquees in Japan.
Yes, yes, yes.
And the whole theme of the marquee was that scene, as if that was the topic of the movie.
Right.
And not only that, but then they blatantly lied and said that this woman who appears later in the movie was playing Margaret Thatcher, which she wasn't. And then they even stuck, you know, at that time, Takeshita was prime minister. They stuck him in there, too. I remember he was hanging off the side of the bullet that was flying in the poster. Just little Takeshita hanging onto the bullet.
Oh, that's hilarious. That's so, and that's a title that they went directly. They call it like the man holding the naked gun.
Hmm.
Which it doesn't really make any, you know, and but they tried to make it similar to the man with a golden gun, the wording.
Okay.
Just like with Star Trek, Star Trek was space, like big space mission, because they were making it, because of the Nimoy connection, they were making it sound like Mission Impossible, which was big spy mission.
Oh.
And so they just like, well, you don't know what this is, but you might have heard of something similar to it. And that's what they we used to go for. Okay.
So they're constantly naming things or portraying things in ways that tie them into other things that they're not actually tied in with.
That's right. So we could have done that the other way with some of these manga titles, like, you know, Full Metal Alchemist could have been the Iron Chef that doesn't cook, or I don't know. Wasn't that one of the things, the Japanese like culture things that caught on in the States, like among non-nerds? Wasn't that like the one of the big things that caught on, the Iron Chef?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Yeah. While we were here. Yeah, so...
Yeah, we were here when that happened, but...
That's right.
Anyway, so we start off with... So this was clearly a color page originally, and Al and Winry are at the hotel desk, and Al is on the phone with Pinako, and he's surprised that Ed still hasn't shown up in Rezumbul, because, of course, Al still doesn't know anything about Maria Ross being alive or any of that.
Right.
And Pinoco says, there's something else, Al. It's terrible. And then we see his side, and she says, well, Ed never showed up. Someone else did. And he says, what? Dad's there. Mm. Now, it's interesting that she says, it's terrible. Is that an accurate translation of the Japanese?
No. She doesn't say it's terrible. She just says, like, oh my God, it's like Taihen.
Taihen.
You know?
Yeah,
and Taihen isn't necessarily terrible. It can just be like, you know, something big's happening.
Yeah. Taihen is not always terrible.
Or something unusual. Something unusual happened.
Okay. I had a feeling that was wrong, because the way that she was acting toward him a couple chapters ago didn't seem like she thought it was terrible that he was back.
Right.
Now, this two-page title page, what is going on here? This picture has nothing to do with the title or anything that happens in this chapter. We've got Ed and Al riding in the back of a horse-drawn wagon, and the wagon driver seems to be getting the horse up to a gallop, and Ed and Al are just kind of hanging on, and then there's a steam engine, you know, train running alongside them.
Okay, so how it ties in is the two birds at the very front of the scene, they actually show up in the background on the page. No, I'm just kidding. I didn't even
notice them.
It's completely, as far as I can tell, completely unrelated, because right now both Ed and Al are not even together in the same you know?
Yeah, and there's no father and no grave in this picture.
Yep. And if you look at it wrong, like if you look at it too quickly, it looks like Al's legs are Ed's legs. It's like, that's not physically possible.
Yeah,
you have to look real close, and then you see, oh, Al's upside down.
Yeah, Al's on his back with his feet up in the air.
So, yeah, I don't know why this horse and carriage has to beat the train.
Hmm.
But it looks like that's what they're trying to do. It's trying to race the train.
Yeah.
And why put the birds in the front going, are those birds really just going to sit there on a post when this like huge horse and buggy thunders by?
Yeah, you expect them to be flying away in terror. Hmm.
That's right.
Anyway, so we pick up right where we left off with Ed confronting Hohenheim.
We could pick up there, or we could spend the whole hour talking about the... No, okay.
Yeah,
no,
the Japanese titles of Schwarzenegger movies.
That's right. Let's pick it up then.
His mom's grave, we find out in this chapter that her name was Tricia. I don't think we knew that before.
I don't think we knew it before either.
So when Hohenheim sees him, he says, "You've gotten bigger." And Ed says, "Why phrase it like a question? You've become quite famous in Central City. The smallest state alchemist in history, right? The youngest."
Yeah, that was good.
Yeah, I mean, Hohenheim just keeps saying the wrong thing. I mean, there's not really a right thing you could say to Ed if you're him, I think.
So is his first name Van, or is that just like the full, you know, because like we know that Van is usually a name added on to
another Dutch name,
or German.
Maybe. Yeah.
Well, German would be Von, right?
Von,
so Von for like, German, like Van for Dutch. And it just means like from or of, right? So like O of Irish and Scottish names, like O'Brien, of the Brian. And so on and so forth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I don't think we've heard him called Van Hohenheim before. Pinico just called him Hohenheim. Oh,
yes. Yeah, and I keep wanting to call him Horkenheimer.
So, yeah, I mean, Van Hohenheim is acting kind of clueless about his wife's death and acting like he's the victim and saying, "Why did you leave me behind?" And Ed's all upset. You're the one that left us. So yeah, the conversation's not going well.
No.
And then they talk about the house being burned down. Yes.
Yeah. Well, I mean, just to kind of recap here, it's like from the boy's point of view, it's because he wasn't around that she had to work so hard, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And that's what drove her to an early grave. So that's what they're, So of course, they're definitely blaming him for not being around.
Yeah. And Van Hohenheim's just saying it was just going to be a little while longer until what, he doesn't say. But yeah, as far as the house, you know, he was surprised to come back and find the house was gone. And Ed says that was because he made up his mind never to turn back. It's a symbol of their resolve. And his father says, "No, you did it because you didn't want to be reminded of your mistake."
Hmm.
Which sounds reasonable to me, actually.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, from like a psychological standpoint, I mean, there is the old historical story of the explorers. They arrived in the New World and then they burned all the ships so that they, you know, wouldn't be tempted to try to go back to Europe, right? Mm-hmm, isn't that that's
I've heard of that, yeah.
Yeah. So, but yeah, I think this other factor is in play as well. The kind of don't want to think about what a terrible thing we did, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I'm not even going to get into all the things that I burned to try to get rid of. not evidence, memories, bad memories.
Mm-hmm. So the father's pushing the point, you were running away, and Ed just gets defensive, doesn't want to hear it, says, "Talking to you makes me sick." He doesn't want to visit his mom's grave anymore because he feels too irritated. And Hohenheim's following him. He says, don't follow me. Hohenheim says, you're going to Pinocchio's house, right? I'm going there too, seeing as I have no home of my own to return to. And he notices that they have the same hair, because they both have ponytails. We see a back view of both of them.
What's the sound of all of Ed's synapses breaking? Yeah,
like, so after he says, yeah, when he says we have the same look, then the sound effect for Ed is snap.
Okay.
And then so he braids his ponytail, braid, and then glare when he turns around and stomp, stomp, stomp.
That's when you know it's mature, when they stomp off. That's when you know, you know. Mm-hmm. But that, yeah, that the sound of the snap is butchy.
Mm-hmm.
Like butching, you know, like mm-hmm. The sound of kirero, like something.
Yeah, and you can see all his veins in his face and his neck.
He's got the Billy Idol mouth going on. With a rebel yell, he wants more, more, more. I worked on that mouth during high school. Got to get that, you know.
And Hohenheim says he's exactly like me when I was his age. And so, yeah, they are both staying at Pinocchio's, and his father looks in on him when he's sleeping and remembers, you know, tiny Ed and Al, and almost touches Ed, but then decides not to and leaves the room. But Ed is actually awake, and he hears Hohenheim's conversation with Pinocchio about their attempt at bringing their mom back to life.
Yeah, and he says, like, why didn't anybody, like, berate them or something like this? And Pinocchio's like, you know, it wasn't the right situation that was the thing, you know. Berating mm-hmm. wasn't the first thing. It was comforting, yeah. Of course, that she, first thing that came to her mind. She's like, you're the parent. You berate them.
Yeah. You know? Scold is the word used in.
Yeah, this. Scold. Yeah.
Hmm. And couldn't you at least have given them a phone call? Tricia was waiting for you. Those boys would never have tried to transmute their mother back to life if you'd been around. But then Hohenheim raises the question, are you sure it was really Tricia? You know, was it the right color hair or the right color of eyes? And she says, are you saying that thing wasn't Tricia? That those boys sacrificed their bodies to create something totally unrelated? That's the cruelest thing I've ever heard.
Wait, no, here's something that I don't quite get. Okay, so what's the dog's name?
Den.
Den. Okay, we've got a bunch of dogs in this series. So Den perks up at something, but it looks like it's off panel.
Right, yeah, well, he's sitting behind Hohenheim, and then, yeah, he notices something. And then we see him go through a doorway, you know, it's into Ed's room.
Okay, all right.
And then on the next, a couple pages later, we see that he's with Ed, as Ed is reacting to this idea that maybe what they brought in their transmutation attempt was not their mom.
Okay, so what Dan is reacting to is he's seeing Ed listening in, and he's like, oh, there's Ed, and I think he needs some petty time.
He wants to be a, what's the word?
Care dog.
Help us out, younger people who have better brains.
A helper dog, home.
There's a particular name for...
I thought it was like a care pet or something like that.
I don't think that's right.
Doesn't sound right. You're right. Doesn't sound right.
No.
Baymax. No.
The phrase I was searching for was emotional support animal. So then it's, I guess, the next morning. Hohenheim's leaving. Ed's still asleep.
And that is, like, not a good rooster. It's just like a thrown. That rooster's just thrown into that panel. It's like not a good rooster.
Looks like, well, it's kind of far away, hard to see, but it looks more like a hen than a rooster.
Yeah, I think it's the tail feathers that are.
Hmm. I don't know, just the head doesn't make me think rooster.
Yeah, exactly. I'm going to give this rooster a 2 out of 5.
And Hohenheim wants to take one of the photos that's on the bulletin board. He says it's the only one of all four of them, himself and Trisha and the two boys.
Yeah, but we've seen this photo.
Yeah, we have. On other scenes in Pinoco's place.
Like, was it in the album? It was in the album, wasn't it?
I think so, or in a frame. I think we may have seen it in a frame, but now it's just pinned to a bulletin board. Maybe there's more than one copy of it floating around at her house.
Which is, yeah, you know. To our readers, y'all might not know this, but it used to be when you took pictures, they would show up on film.
Yeah, you'd have to take the film down to the Photoshop. Not Adobe, but an actual shop that did
photos. A little hut in the middle of a parking lot where a guy had to sit there for 12 hours and, just pick up people's photos and pass them out.
Yeah.
They did all the developing elsewhere.
Yeah, yeah. Or in Japan, it might have been at an electronics shop or in a train station or something.
I'll tell you one thing that a long time ago, this is during my first marriage, we took some nude photos in White Sands, New Mexico. Okay. Mm. And then we went to the Kmart to get them, what do you call it? Developed, right? Mm-hmm. And so what I didn't realize is the photos are kind of like popping out of the machine one by one in full view of like everybody. And so I just kind of kept the counter lady distracted the whole time until it just made like a nice pile of photos. And then she just put them in the bag. And I was like, all right, I'm going to – whew, that was a close one. My life is too much like one of those 80s comedies that's like just ridiculous, you know. The kind that you couldn't make today. The kind that you could, yeah.
Well, yeah, or what is it? Revenge of the Nerds or something. Or Porky's.
Yeah, but hopefully a lot less rapey than those. Mm-hmm. So, not hopefully, definitely.
Yeah.
But hijinks were included in my life. All right, so now where are we?
Yeah, so Hohenheim takes that photo, and then he warns her, something terrible will happen in this country. Escape while you can. So that seems to be the reason that he showed up in the first place, was to warn people that he cares about to get out before something happens.
Wasn't there another warning from someone about... you know, things are about to get hot up in this thing.
I think maybe the homunculi have discussed it.
Yeah, it's possible. I just felt like there was a warning, somebody was warning about, you know, things are about to get interesting or whatever. So watch out. And I don't know, President Bradley, did he warn somebody or something?
I don't know. It's 42 chapters now. I need to go back and reread them and refresh my memory.
Yeah. We're not reading these like you would. You'd read them, you'd read like a whole book in a night or two, and then you'd keep going. But we've got a lot of distance between each chapter.
Right. So. Normally when you read this book, you don't sit down and record a podcast for an hour after each chapter.
Until Corona, and then everybody does.
Right, yeah. So she's not really taking it seriously, because she says terrible things happen in this country every year all the time. Why should I run away now? Mm. And there are those who need this house as a place to come home to. So she's not planning to get out. Right. And she tells him to come back for a meal once in a while, but as he's walking away out of her earshot, he says, it's too bad, Pinoco, I won't be able to eat your cooking anymore.
And right in the panel before that, there's some birds in the sky. See what I tell you? Those birds.
Oh, yeah, there they are. From the splash page.
From the splash page.
Okay. Yeah, see, we reveal the details about this comic in this podcast. You know, things that you would have normally missed.
And things you really don't care about.
When you watched Batman as a kid, you enjoyed the colorful heroes and villains, the text sound effects on the screen, the thrill of watching a heroic crime fighter escaping from death traps and taking down bad guys. But the show was devised to interest adults, too. What did you miss as a kid? Sexual innuendo.
The Penguin's too small for me.
Closeted gay characters.
I like that cape, Batman.
Freudian death traps.
Has the giant clam really swallowed Robin?
Police incompetence.
Bruce Wayne is a millionaire playboy. Hardly a secret identity for Batman.
Whether you're a kid or an adult, there's something to like about our favorite caped crusader. Tim and Paul dig for the deeper meanings under the Batmania every other Thursday. What's the podcast's name?
To the Batpoles. To the Batpoles. To the Batpoles.
So then we're back at the hotel with Al and Winry and Lean and Lanfan. And Al is explaining that his dad showed up at Pinoco's after being missing for 10 years. And he doesn't even really remember his father. He was way too little when he left.
That's right.
And he's thinking, I would like to discuss alchemy with him. And he's kind of upset because he knows that if Ed is meeting their father, he's just yelling at him and might want to punch him. And he did say at the graveside there that if they weren't at their mother's grave, he would punch him.
Yeah, you know what? It's so bizarre is that he's talking this way to his, you know, like when Ed was talking his way to his, that way to his father, like really rude. And I think like maybe I've been in this country for too long because I was like, that's rude. You're not supposed to talk to your dad like that. Or maybe I'm just getting old. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. And they ask Lean about his father. Are you close to your father? And he says, it's hard to be close to him when I've never even had a conversation with him. And explains that his father's the emperor and that he is a prince, which I guess they missed that before because it certainly has been talked about in the comic. But they both then picture him as kind of a Disney prince with a white horse.
And a huge collar, you know? Yeah,
ruffled collar like Shakespearean or something.
Yeah, yeah. I was thinking Sir Walter Raleigh or Sir Walter Scott. I always get those confused.
Yeah, me too.
One of them makes cigarettes, I think. I think my grandma used to smoke Raleighs.
Mm.
And so that whole Winston and Raleigh, and they used to have these stamps that if you bought those cigarettes, you would get these stamps. Mm. And my grandmother collected the crap out of these stamps. And she would like had booklets and booklets full and she'd send away for stuff. But I was like, you know, she died of lung cancer. So it's like, yeah. You know, how bad do you want that toaster? You know? So.
Yeah. So Al and Winry are just cracked up by the idea of him as a prince, or at least the way that they were picturing him.
Yeah, they look they look like they're like having shivers or something, you know?
So in English, they're laughing. He, 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 he.
Oh, is it laughter?
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess it's laughter. I couldn't quite tell. I mean,
you can't see their faces because...
Yeah, I mean, because their body language can be like they're trying to hold it in.
Mm.
But it can also be like, I don't know, it looked like they had the shivers or something. Like they were like, yee, you know, like... Well,
yeah, and they're sweating.
Yeah.
Which is a little odd maybe from an American perspective, but...
Yeah, it's just, it's funny that they both picture what a prince is, you know, like they both picture what he might look like in a very similar way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah, okay. Yeah, it's definitely laughing because it continues on to the next panel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, when she's got her hand on her face and she's saying, hey, I'm sorry, it was just too much to take. And sound effect is... PFT. And then he points out that if she married him, then she could be the future empress. A real Cinderella story, he says. And she says, And she's got these strange eyes that are like all eyelash, maybe. I don't know. I'm not sure how to characterize them.
Yeah, it's this simplified, like, I mean, it's whenever they're also like drawn in kind of a super cartoony, you know, with like very simple eyes and the huge open mouths. This kind of style, I think, became popular for gag comics around, you know, like a little bit before this time. And so it's kind of like a recognized style almost.
Yeah. So it's her reaction to the idea of being an empress in the future. So it's kind of maybe kind of implying dreaminess.
Maybe. I think it's because she's saying ho ho. And so it's kind of like,
It's ho ho in Japanese. Yeah. It's yes. Hmm. In viz.
But it's kind of like, she's like, interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But then he starts to ask her, so Winry, how about being my and she's got a wrench in her hand now that she, for some reason, thwacks him in the face with. Yeah, the sound effect is thwack. She says, oh, I just couldn't. There are people in this country who need automail engineers like me. Heart.
I think that's like because he used the word bride, and I think she's like, it's like an embarrassed reaction of a sudden, like, even though it's a joke proposal, like, it's like this an embarrassed reaction, and it's like over the top, you know, because it's Windry and she uses tools made of steel.
So, but then the next obvious question is, if you're a prince, why are you always collapsing from hunger in the street and freeloading for food? But he explains that there are over 20 princes. Lanfan says there are 24 princes and 19 princesses. Qing is a nation comprised of 50 different ethnic clans. So I guess basically the royalty is a pretty crowded thing in Qing.
Right. It don't mean a thing if you ain't got that Shang.
Right.
Do up, do up.
So, but there's some kind of competition regarding inheritance in Qing. Presently in Qing, the clans are desperately vying for power. Whoever wins the emperor's favor will succeed him to the throne. And the emperor is dying, and so Al realizes, okay, the thing that would impress him most is secret to immortality. But if you give him immortality, then he won't die. So then nobody else can become emperor. But Lin isn't optimistic that he would actually become immortal. But it would give him a semblance of immortality long enough to win his favor.
What is a semblance of immortality?
Yeah, so kind of immortal.
Your foot will live on.
Temporarily immortal.
Your big toe will never die.
For a while. So then Lin is saying that he sees Al's body as a kind of immortality.
Okay.
You will never die that way. But Al says, I'm not immortal. I don't even know if I'll have a normal human lifespan.
Right.
This body of mine is a ticking time bomb. Does that sound accurate?
Yeah, I think so. Okay. Yeah, time-limited time bomb, so yeah.
Yeah, that's come up once before. Now I'm struggling to remember when, but that he was concerned that staying in that body might be dangerous to him.
Right.
So then we go back to the hospital. Mustang is sitting on one of those Japanese hospital sofas. And Hawkeye is standing there. Then this coroner comes along sitting next to him. What's his name? Knox.
Who's there? Oh, I'm sorry.
No, he doesn't knock. His name is Knox. He sits down. And he's the coroner who looked at, quote-unquote, Maria Ross's body. And he could tell that it wasn't a human body, but because the dental records that had been provided matched up, or I should not records, but like, didn't Mustang actually create some teeth with alchemy, like the to fit her records?
Something like that. It was either that or they made the records to fit the thing.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I remember him talking about creating teeth with alchemy, that it was not hard if he had the right materials. But Knox is saying, you know, you need to do a better job when you burn them up. He says, for a body that was supposed to have died from incineration, the limbs were all out of whack. But the teeth did match, so I said that it was Maria Ross. If anyone else had done the autopsy, you could have found yourself in a world of trouble. Then we find out that Knox was involved in Ishbal in the war, and basically he's saying we did a lot of terrible things. Ishbal was nothing but a huge bloody laboratory with human beings as the guinea pigs. We're not comrades in arms, we're accomplices.
Yeah, that's... We run across a similar theme in that science fiction series, The Expanse, where just people are being used as guinea pigs. There's... You know, one of the theories about the second atomic bomb during World War II is that even though they possibly didn't have to drop the second bomb, but they wanted to because they wanted to see how it affected more people or something. There's that, you know, kind of conspiracy theory as well. But it's something that's in the zeitgeist, right?
Okay. Mustang is looking at a medical book showing a picture of a spine because he's thinking about Havoc, who, you know, his legs don't work now.
Thank you. Because I was like, what's he doing? Now I realize he's trying to think of how he might be able to help Havoc. Right. Okay, I get it now.
He's saying, well, when I first saw that book, it looked like it was a caterpillar or something, not rather than a spine. I didn't figure it out until I got to the next page, and Knox is thinking spinal anatomy, and he asks, did someone get hurt? And Mustang says, my subordinate suffered spinal damage that paralyzed his lower body. So, and that's Knox right. thinks it's unlikely he'll be able to return to service. Then we see Knox with Breda, and you were wondering, I think it was last episode, if he could just get automail.
Yeah, I was talking about, like what could automail do? You know, could he be set up with some automail legs?
Yeah, but Havoc says the nerve signals are completely cut off from my lower body, so it's impossible. So you need to have your nerves intact, I guess, in order to get the automail.
I wonder how, like, you know, how about Darth Maul? Like, when you're just, like, cut, you know, cut in half. Can you, you know, if you just, like, if you cut at the right space where the nerves still work, could you, like, how much control, how much nerve control do you need? Yeah. Don't know. I mean, you know, we know it's not robotics, but it's, yeah.
Yeah, this is another thing. I have no recollection of how it turns out. And then Breda goes out and talks to Mustang and says, we could ask Dr. Marco about Havoc's legs.
Right, Dr. Marco.
Marco has a philosopher's stone. So he says, is it possible to extend my vacation time? I'll take care of it. Mustang says, go. So then we see Dr. Marco treating a patient. A kid's hurt his hand and his mother is standing there. And they leave, and then there's a knock on the door. Not Knox, it's a knock on the door. And he opens the door and sees Breda. And Breda is saying, I'm here to escort you back. Marco is kind of arguing with him. No, you got the wrong person, or whatever. I have no idea what you're talking about with the Philosopher's Stone. Please leave. And then we see Gluttony standing there.
Also known as Cannibal Ziggy.
Yes. And when Marco sees that, he tries to slam the door shut, but Breda catches it and pushes it open. And then the way that he's talking, Marco realizes it's not Breda, it's Envy. And he changes back to his Envy form. So it was interesting because, you know, Arakawa's tricking us here, because we know Breda is headed there, and then Envy is disguised as Breda. So we think, oh, there's Breda. Just this is later, and he's there now. Like, no.
That's right. There's, you know, we don't know how much time is taking place between the scenes. So,
mm-hmm.
You know, it's very possible that it was Breda.
Mm. So they are there to get Marco to come back with them to work on their project with the father and Bradley and so forth at Central. And really threatens him. Like, if you do anything other than come with us, we'll destroy this village.
Mm-hmm. Like, not like erase almost, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I think it's the language that's used.
Okay. Yeah, he says, try anything funny and this village will be wiped out. And if you decide to commit suicide like the coward you are, it's bye-bye village. Do I make myself clear? There's only one choice that's available to you. So, then, next page, the real Breda is at the door and nobody's answering. He asks a passerby, do you know if the doctor is out? And the guy says, huh? Aren't you the man who went into the doctor's office a little while ago? What happened? Did you forget something? Breda says, no, this is the first time I've ever been here. And the guy says, I could have sworn I saw you going in there earlier wearing a military uniform, which he's not now.
Right. Oh, because he's on his vacation.
Right. So he breaks down the door and nobody's there and signs of a struggle all over the place. A big mess, and
or the signs of a man living by himself.
Well, it could be too. Bachelor pad. And he says, not good. What is the Japanese says, there? Not he says, good.
Not good.
It's an understatement.
He says, dochiksho, which is like basically like the cleanest way you could say, God damn it.
No, I think the cleanest way you can say it is not good.
You got me there, Tim Young.
I would have liked a little bit more edge to his reaction.
That's right. I'm so not good. Tired of these not good. Snakes on this not good. Plain.
And that's the end of the chapter.
That's the end of the chapter. Not good.
Not good.
This chapter was like, we do have some dramatic things happening. And we learned some stuff about Lin. We learn, you know, we have some more doppelganger hijinks, right?
Yeah. And so, yeah, I mean, there's always a little bit of new information in every chapter, I think. But now, what is this about that thing that they brought back with their attempt at not really being their mother? What else would it have been?
Well, I think the point is that it's because it was their mother that they feel so horrible that they brought their mother back in this shape, in this form, and that it was such a just an abomination, and then they feel horrible that they subjected their mother, who they wanted to save, to this hell, and you know, possibly they didn't need to go through all that guilt. Perhaps is what I was thinking.
You think maybe he's just trying to convince them to let it go? Let it go, let it go.
See, I knew I could get you singing on here. Just a matter of time. But I don't know if he's trying to convince them of anything. I think he's actually just saying something directly, maybe just something straight that he's thinking of. I'm not sure, you know, there's any kind of deception involved. It's just that basically it's what's possible is like you open the gates, you don't know what's going to come through, you know, and the fact that it kind of looked like it might've been their mother was maybe wishful thinking or, the will was involved, you know, like what you wanted to manifest, the thing that came over. There's a lot of this kind of, you know, you open the door and you don't know what's going to come through. You know, I mean, isn't The Exorcist kind of that kind of story, basically? And any movie with a Ouija board. You thought you were talking with the nice old spirit, Captain Howdy, but what you got was Pazuzu, demon prince of the nether realms.
Any sound effects that stood out?
Well, I liked the, I liked him losing his temper there. That ba-ching, you know.
Yeah, I never really examined the sound effects until now. So, you know, I always want to go with something original, and a lot of the sound effects in this one are just kind of typical sound effects.
Yeah, English. There's not a lot of...
Maybe I would point out when Envy as Breda is trying to push the door open and Marco is pushing it closed, the sound effect is grunch, grunch, grunch.
That's pretty good. That's pretty good. It's just gee, 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 at the end. So you have gee, 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 gee. And so it's like, it's kind of telling a story there, you know, with the sound, you know, it's building up, ratcheting up. And then there's this, you know, at the end, there's something's going to happen. And then the next panel. So, yeah, you're a mean one, Mr. Grinch, was it? Was it
Grinch? Yeah, it's Grinch without the I. G-R-N-C-H.
A one-eyed Grinch? Oh, my God, that's horrible.
A no-eyed Grinch.
A no-eyed Grinch, that's even worse.
This is following the pattern of the sound effects I used to put in my comic with no vowels. So, do you think this one applies to the law of equivalent exchange? Did we get what we paid for?
No good. No, yeah, yeah.
Not good.
Not good. I think it applies. I think this isn't going to be a chapter where I'm like, ooh, I can't wait to reread that chapter again. But there's possibly some things here that are going to lead to other things, like those two pigeons. On the post. Who knows?
So what's the future storyline of those birds? Yeah, we got...
With Arakawa, you never know.
Keep an like eye out for the birds, too.
You know, they could be, you know, flying above, you know. You never know. You never know. Poop on the bad guy at the right moment. Who knows? So, what do we say about that again?
Well, the law of equivalent exchange means...
You get what you pay for.
Right. Okay. Well, see you next time.
Next time.
Our theme is Winter Fiend by Cryosyncope. You can follow us on Twitter at LOEE Podcast or email us at LOEEPodcast@deconstructingcomics.com. Support our show on Patreon at patreon.com/deconcomics. See you in 2 weeks. The Law of Equivalent Exchange is a production of DeconstructingComics.com.
Let me press, get ready to press the thing. All right, I'm ready to press the thing.
Okay, press the thing.
The thing is pressed.
Okay.
It don't mean a thing if you ain't got that shang.
Right.
Do up, do up. I thought you were going to jump on that one. I was going to let you, but you forced me, Tim. You forced me.
Focused on what to say next here. How much detail to go into?